everybody. The new episode is coming right up. But first, I want to remind you there are three quick ways that you can support the Fat Guy Forum and help the show keep going. First, make sure that you have rated and reviewed the show on whatever pod service you're using, whether that is Apple, Spotify, or whatever it is. Make sure you're doing that. Two, you can join the Patreon for a few dollars a month. You get access to the after show. You help keep things going because this show does have costs. And you're able to be a part of the Fat Guy Forum community that I would love to see grow, get your input on what you want to see going on with the show, and more. And the third and final way, if you can't join the Patreon, but you're buying products for yourself that I'm an affiliate for, like Redmond Real Salt and Kettle and Fire Bone Broth, there are links and codes in the show notes where you will save money when you use them, and I get a little bit to help things going here. So, please, pick at least one of those ways to support the show if you enjoy listening to it on a regular basis, and know that I appreciate whatever you choose to do. And now let's get on with the episode. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Fat Guy Forum. This is your host, Gourmet, and I am happy to be with you once again, ready to bring you the story of another dude out there who is trudging down that journey and crushing it. He reached out to me, actually, a couple weeks ago, and I'm excited to have him on the show. His name is Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm good, Mike. I appreciate you having me on today. Thanks.
Definitely, man. I'm excited to get into it with you, so let's dive right in, man. Tell us. What qualifies you to be on the Fat Guy Forum?
That's a good question, and I was turning that one over in my head as to why I'm here and how I got here. I think as any good story goes, right? You have to start at the beginning. And I can honestly report, you know, the first few years of my life were uneventful, and then the weight started coming on. I want to say I was 170 pounds as a 10-year-old. And that was really the first time that was ever like addressed by a medical professional. I remember going to see a nutritionist, my parents took me to when I was a kid. And so it's always been there for me, right? Food has always been that comfort and that place to go hide, even when I was a kid, right? So I had a lot of sadness that'll come into play, right, when we, you know, get a little bit later in life as well. A lot of depression that fed into to my food habits due to some family circumstances. But I would say that, you know, up until that 10-year-old mark, I was, you know, in peaceful bliss and ignorance, you know, to the fact that I was developing a crippling food addiction. And that's, you know, that's the best way for me to describe it, right? As crippling, right? I think if I can best sum up why I'm qualified to be here, it's because I was 450 pounds at 23 years old. That's extreme. It's something that I've struggled to overcome, right? Every day it's a struggle to overcome. And there's a lot of other things that tie into it, right? And I apologize if I ramble. I'm a bit of a rambler here.
Oh, so, no, it's okay, man. It's okay. And obviously there's a big space between 170 at 10 years old and hitting, right, 450, like.
Yeah, totally. And there's a lot, you know, that contributed to that in the middle. Right. So I would say, if you're just going to highlight the key points, right, going to that nutritionist, that cemented the shame around food for me. It wasn't something that I interpreted as a loving gesture by my parents to help me. It was something I interpreted as, you're bad. We got to fix this. And so, from that really early age, it got implanted in my mind that the way that I acted around food was bad. And I ran with that. And it was reinforced, right? When I was in middle school, I experienced some extremely intense bullying by just one individual in particular that culminated in a physical assault. And that has stuck with me ever since. You know, I'm 27 now, just about to be 28, and 15 years down the line, right? I think it's something I think about almost every day. It's shaped who I am as an individual. And there is a lot of sadness and anger, I think, tied into that still. But there's also a lot of gratitude in a weird way, that, you know, yes, I experienced these circumstances, and yeah, I experienced a lot of hardship and feeling ostracized by my peers, but that led me to, you know, finding out who I am, right? And learning that who Cole is worth loving. And that's really the, you know, if there's a message I have for anybody here, right? It's that you're worth loving. And I mean, it's as simple as that. It sounds cliche, of course, but it truly is. And there's another large part of my life that kind of excuse me, was perpetuated and kind of was the catalyst for my overeating, and so I was a drug addict for quite a while, and I've experienced drug addiction to a pretty severe degree. So just to go, I guess, timeline wise, I had pretty strict parents through high school. You know, kind of, hey, you can drink with your buddies at the house on the weekend, but drugs were off the table, right? No smoking pot, nothing like that. I'm from North Carolina originally, so if you imagine like the typical Southern conservative family, right? That's what I come from, and I know my dad's gonna want to listen to this at some point, so I apologize in advance, Dad. That's, you know, there was a lot of expectations around how to behave, and so in being involved in any sort of, you know, illicit activity like that was just off the table. But it spurred me to rebel. And what also spurred me was this deep, overwhelming desire to fit in. So all I wanted to do was fit in. I wanted people to like me. I just wanted to have people that cared and wanted me in their circle. And so desperately wanted to connect. I would go to any length, right? I was the yes man. You know, it's like if you wanted somebody to do something stupid because you think it would be funny, right? I'm the first one to volunteer, because I craved that connection so badly. And naturally that led me towards substance abuse, right? Because that is a phenomenal way of manufacturing a false sense of connection. And so when I went to college straight out of high school, I was, you know, woefully unprepared for not having any guidelines, right? Having complete independence. So my eating took off, right? Because now I don't have my parents looking over my shoulder anymore. And my drug use took off. So I started smoking pot every day. And, you know, you get the munchies and then you eat. And so it was just this cycle. And so when I was 19, I actually ended up at 420 pounds. And that was my first experience with weight loss. So I've actually lost a significant amount of weight twice. So when I was 19, I went to a quote unquote wellness camp, if you want to call it that, a fat camp, for a summer. And I lost, you know, I think I lost 50 pounds in 7 weeks. I mean, it was extreme. The first week I was there, I'll never forget, I lost 18 pounds in 4 days. And I was like, whoa, like this is crazy. Like this is so wild. It was awesome, right? I loved it. And that camp did phenomenal things for me, and I'll always sing their praises. Because I think that the approach that they had to it was really well-rounded, and, you know, it was safe for the most part. And so that kind of gave me that momentum I needed, right, to after that summer when I came back to North Carolina to continue losing weight. And I ended up getting down to about 300 pounds when I was 20 years old. And then of course, now that my confidence had risen, and I was experiencing this weight loss, I fell in love. I found a woman that, you know, I was convinced at the time, wanted nothing but my best interests. And so that's kind of a recurring theme as well. The right with this, wanting connection is seeking validation, particularly from women. Not feeling good enough, right? Not feeling like I was attractive enough, that my weight was a turnoff. And I think that's something, you know, every fat guy can relate to, right? It's always there in the back of the mind. And so I felt like I had it made. I was like, awesome, we're good to go. That relationship turned out to be, you know, super toxic and very, very emotionally abusive. And so I did leave after a year. But I had no sense of self-worth after that, right? I had tied my emotional state to this woman's opinion of me for so long that I didn't know how to find that worth within myself. And again, that's also a recurring theme, right? What is self-worth to me? How do I find that within myself? But in leaving this relationship, I really went off the deep end with substance abuse. Because I didn't want to gain weight. I was so terrified of like gaining this weight back. And cocaine is a really good appetite suppressant. Like, you know, I was all for it, right? Amphetamines, cocaine, right? Anything, right? Because in my mind it was this two-pronged approach, you know. I was feeling good. I was feeling like I connected with people. And I wasn't hungry, and so that my life's fixed. If those two things, and so that spiraled out of control really quickly. I dropped out of school and moved back home with my parents because I just, you know, I'm really good at hiding these things. I'm a really good liar, and I feel like that's something that a lot of people that struggle with weight and food are really good at and concealing things. Which I think is funny because like you're trying to conceal, you know, your food habits, but the results are written all over your body. It's, you know, this kind of weird oxymoronic thing, but,
oh yeah. Parents... And we've discussed that I've discussed that with other guests on the show, that whole idea of us being fantastic liars and thinking that we're crafting these, you know, grand plans and grand schemes that no one knows anything about, but it shows on your body, you know, like it's there,
right?
It's physically, yeah. You can't physically hide it. You know, there is no, you know, there's no shirt baggy enough to hide it as much as sometimes right. We think that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to convince myself of the lie. That's really the root of it. You know, I feel like it gets to a certain point where I'm no longer trying to make everyone else think that I'm well put together and I'm okay, quote unquote. And it's just me. It's the only way I can get through the day. It's the only way I can get to sleep at night, knowing that I'm actively destroying my body. So my drug addiction really kind of took off there, and it was June of 2016. I ended up overdosing. I don't even know what to be honest with you. I don't remember much. But I know that I had to be Narcan'd, 5 or 6 times, I believe. And if anyone's unfamiliar with what Narcan is, it reverses the, effects of an opiate overdose. Normally you only need to get hit one time for that. So I was pretty far gone. And I'm lucky to be alive, really. And so that necessitated the need for rehab. I needed to get professional help. So I did, and I went to an inpatient rehab facility, and I started addressing my substance abuse problems. And then the food came right back because I'm not there's there goes my appetite suppressant. There goes the mental defense that I had built of, you know, being able to convince myself that that I was, you know, that I was doing good with my food because of my addiction, and so once I was in rehab, it came back full force, because in my mind, well, I'm dealing with the drugs, I might as well be able to indulge in something. And so my weight, you know, skyrocketed right back up, and went higher than it had before. And that was, it's really how I ended up at 450 pounds at 23, was, you know, thinking that just because I was treating my substance abuse issue, that was enough. But that should just take care of everything. But I didn't find that to be the truth. And, so I think, I guess what everyone, I guess, is, you know, listening for is, right, is like the how did I do it, right? How did I lose the weight?
Well, before we get to that, let's talk about this a little bit, because
yeah,
I'm curious about the, you know, because I think a lot of times we talk about like the intersectionality of addiction, and I think like your story really highlights that piece, because you're not going to overdose on cheeseburgers overnight. So I think there is that sense of, even when we are using food, whether it's as a coping mechanism or for comfort or to numb out, or for a lot of the reasons that people use, you know, drugs and alcohol as well, there's the perspective on it can be a little bit different. So going through that, you know, as someone who, you know, was conscious of your issues with food, but going through, you know, kind of conquering these other issues that literally brought you to the brink of death. And if, you know, if you haven't heard it enough, you know, obviously, you know, myself, and I'm sure every person listening, is glad that you're here to tell your story and be able to share that experience. Like, what was your perspective on, or do you have a perspective, you think, on the things that all of the way these different substances, you know, what you were using them for in your life, you know, food versus drugs, like, was it similar pathways? Does that question make sense? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if I'm understanding you correctly, right, like what's the end goal, right? Like, what was my end game here, with using the substance, right? And so for me, as it relates to substance abuse, I'm very, very good at deluding myself. And so I was in this heavy delusion that I wasn't doing anything wrong or destructive or harmful, nothing, right? With food, I knew that there was some consequence there, but when I started to treat the drug addiction and started to recognize it as being as intense and destructive as it was, it, in my mind, outweighed the destruction that food caused. And so, right, like you said, you don't overdose on cheeseburgers. So in my mind, the justification is, well, I'll just have this one. You know, it's not going to matter that much. It's just a cheeseburger, right? Tomorrow will be different. But that's not how, I don't have the kind of mind that can stop there, right? I just can't. The one turns into 1,000. And then I end up where I ended up, which is not being able to walk, you know, 100 yards without my lower back seizing up and getting shin splints and none of my clothes ever fitting. And I mean, I'm, it might be, you know, TMI, but I'm sure people can relate that, like, it gets hard to, you know, it's hard to clean yourself when you're that big.
Oh yeah. One of the very first episodes of the show, I shared that at my heaviest, I used to actually use kitchen spoons wrapped in toilet paper to clean myself. You know, these people have heard me say it before if they're listening. So it's not TMI on my end. They've heard it before.
Fair.
But I think it's
fair enough.
But the amazing thing to me was, you think you're alone to some extent in that struggle. Like, you know, especially, yeah, you know, because at that point, you know, it was, for me, it was the early 2000s, you know, mid, you know, early 2000s towards 2010. And it wasn't like if I went on, you know, the internet, there was 50,000 things being sold to help with reach issues, which if you went on there now, you went on Amazon now, you could find probably 10 different brands of wiping tools, you know. Now, so I share that experience, and the amount of feedback I got from people that said, I thought I was the only person dealing with that. Like, those are very real issues, you know, when you get to that size, you know, the size that you were. And I think the thing that's, you know, when you listen to different stories on this show, you know, a lot of times people end up at the same weight, but how they get there can be very different, you know, and there's in some ways major pathways. And, you know, one of them, I think, is the addictive nature of food, you know, someone with a disordered relationship with food. And then there's the habitual side, you know, the person that was just raised with poor eating habits, never learned about portion control, didn't understand nutrition, and found themselves in that place. And so I think, you know, like you said, there's that connection between those things that you were going through that makes a lot of sense.
And yeah. And I think I got the unfortunate piece of having both of those things you mentioned, right? Like, I mean, I'm from a Southern family, you know, the culture is food oriented, right? If you're, you know, coming to a gathering and you didn't bring two main dishes and two sides, like, you were unprepared. You know, it's eat until you can't stay awake anymore and then take a nap and then have seconds. Right. So it's, you know, it's a mixture of the habitual nature of the culture I grew up in and not understanding portion size, coupled with the addictive nature that I inherently possess. And so, you know, that was, I got to this weight and I remember sitting there and just being like, what do I do? Like, what, like, how did, I'm 23 years old and I can't, you know, I can't even wipe myself properly. Right. Like, I was this overwhelming despair. And so I tell my story as it relates to substance abuse at, rehab centers. Every month I have a commitment that I go to and share. And then I also end up talking about food quite a bit within it because it's a large part of my story. And I always try to preface, my story by saying that I don't have a monopoly on recovery, right? How I did it is not the only way to do it, right? There's a lot of people in the world that don't have disordered thinking around food and through habit changes and, you know, proper portion control and things, they can recover from overeating. Unfortunately, I'm just not one of them. So I had to get a bit more extreme. And so I won't go too much into specifics given the nature of it, but I do a 12-step program for food. And I do a subset of this 12-step program relating to food that is very stringent. There's a lot of daily actions that I take, right? So I weigh and measure everything that I eat. Nothing that I eat nothing goes in my mouth without going on a scale first, outside of a beverage. And I don't eat processed sugar. And I try to avoid white flour as much as I can because those were the two main triggers for my addiction, right? And I think a lot of people, you know, can relate to that. So that was kind of step one, right? It was like, I got to get this processed sugar and this flour out. And I just got to start weighing stuff. And so I did. But I had to take it a step further. Right. I like I said, I'm so good at putting myself into these delusions that eventually because this wasn't the first time I'd tried to weigh and measure my food and, you know, follow a meal plan from a nutritionist, that this was not my first foray. Trust me, I've tried almost everything you can think of. And there will come a day when I look at the scale and I say, well, maybe another ounce will be okay today, right? I'm a little hungry. And so I start making the decisions again, and that is when I get into trouble. I can't be the one making the decisions. And so the way that I overcome that is I have an individual who sponsors me within this program, and I call them every day. My designated time is 6:45 in the morning Central Time. I get up pretty early, so you know, it's usually how I start my day, and I tell them what I'm going to eat. I lay it out. right? Everything I'm going to eat. I'm going to have 6 ounces of chicken, 6 ounces of rice, 12 ounces of vegetables, right? 10 grams of butter. And I just lay that out. And now I have somebody holding me accountable. Now I have somebody that's also got skin in the game, because now they know what I'm going to eat. And I, you know, that's what I found that worked for me, right? I've lost, 170 pounds, through doing this. I still do it even today, right? I still got, you know, plenty of room to grow in that area, right? Like I still fall into the morbidly obese category. It's not something I'm not done walking that road, and I don't think I ever will be, right? But I can, you know, come on here and report to you, right, that it's gotten a heck of a lot easier, right? And that's I think that was just the biggest barrier to entry for me, right? Especially being as overweight as I was thinking that I had to lose 200 pounds tomorrow, right? It wasn't like, you know, okay, we'll start with, you know, 10 pounds, right? And then that turns into 20, right? It's given the nature of my mind as well, my addictive personality and the way that I take things to the extreme, right? I immediately, like, my mind's like, I have to lose 200 pounds. And then that thought is so overwhelming that I just get stuck in action and I do nothing. And it just perpetuates itself over and over and over and until, you know, I end up in the situation I was in. But, you know, I feel like I've been given a gift to be able to experience this, right? I think that's the theme that I really wanted to try and get across, you know, when you invited me onto the show was that I'm grateful for all of this. I'm grateful to be experiencing this. I'm grateful for the struggles. I have learned to appreciate life so much more, you know, going from extreme morbid obesity to, you know, I guess it's still an improvement, but to like regular morbid obesity.
Right, right.
You know, like we're trending in the right direction, but...
not quite as morbid obesity.
Right, exactly. Not, you know, my CPAP machine not telling me I stopped breathing 60 times in an hour, you know, overnight, going down to 5, right? Like, it's that kind of stuff. It's made me so grateful and given me the ability to appreciate, right? Like we were talking about earlier, being able to properly clean myself after going to the bathroom, not feeling like I have this odor that follows me around all the time. You know, I can go into a Target and buy clothes that are just there. I don't have to go to the, you know, big and tall department stores anymore. And it's so reassuring and it's so helpful for me to take notice of the smaller victories. Right. And to find a community to share that with. Right. I'm a very private person. I'm not usually one to just, you know, I don't know. I have quite a bit of social anxiety. And so talking to new people and putting myself out there in any sort of way is not something that really makes me very comfortable. But I did find that through this program, right, that developing a sense of community is the most surefire way that I could maintain and perpetuate my recovery from overeating, right? Knowing, like you said, that I'm not the only one going through these things. I'm not the only one that's struggling with, you know, whatever weird little, you know, issue that may come from being 450 pounds, right? Like, you know, not being able to really bend over and tie my shoes. I just want to reduce that, the stigma, man. I mean, the stigma is just so oppressive, and it makes me so upset, you know, to see just to see how much this is brushed under the rug, especially for men, and how hesitant men are to talk about the problems with food, right?
Well, I think there's something really, like you said, there's a hesitancy and a stigma, and I think the stigma is, you know, still comes from that place of why don't you just stop eating so much? Like, eat everything you're eating right now, just cut it back. And I think part of that isn't just the attitude of people that don't struggle with those issues, so they can't even conceive of what that life is like. Like someone who has never eaten themselves to the point where they have trouble cleaning themselves, you know, not that we're going to just always use that as the example, but also, like you said, being able to walk 100 feet, like all of those things, like, doesn't have a conception of when they think it's just about you're choosing to not put the fork down, you know, and there's this dialogue on choice, you know, and I talk a lot about choice with people when I work with them or when I talk on the show, like, talk about intentionality in life, but it's not always about everything. I have the exact same power when it comes to these different issues and these different facets and these different foods, and, you know, that stigma's there. And I think part of it also comes from, like, the health and weight loss space, you know, on social media and in, you know, media in general, you know, the fact that you go on Instagram right now and there are 50 different influencers who have lost 5 pounds because they were so incredibly overweight at one point in their life that they struggled with the same 5 to 7 pounds for 5 years, not to downplay their experience, because I know someone's going to listen to that and get mad. But then that person is telling you, well, once I discovered that if I change my portions, I just never knew that I shouldn't have 2 cheeseburgers. So now I have 1 cheeseburger and I'm fine. Or I allow myself the hot fudge sundae once a week and I'm fine. And it's like, well, that is great for you. You know, yeah. I applaud, you know, I've had guys on the show that were 500 pounds. And once they learned about portion control, completely changed their lives, because that was their relationship with food. And I think something that's in your story, that's in a lot of people's stories, is this idea of finding what works right for you and being okay with it. Because I think that's the other thing that a lot of people struggle with. They see the tools, like someone might hear the tool, you know, hear what you're using and be like, I want to investigate this for myself. And then once I use that to lose the 200 pounds I need to lose, I can go right back to what I was doing before, because now I'll magically know how to control everything. You know, I'm going to understand. And to me, that just smacks so much of, like, someone who's going through, you know, dealing with an addiction to drugs or alcohol, saying, you know, once I get clean for a year, I know that I'm going to be able to go back to it and control it. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, from your experience, you know, especially working, you know, going to rehabs and talking to people, that's a real thought that people have sometimes when they struggle with all addictions.
But I've had that thought. Yeah. I mean, like, I cannot say I have been completely stone cold sober since the day I went to rehab, right? I've had relapse as part of my story, and with food as well. Right? Like that, you know, I will never claim perfection into this. It's extremely insidious illness. Right. And so, yeah, I'm totally with you.
And what I'm curious about, like, if you can, you know, speak to your own experience with it, is I'm sure there's someone listening and hearing you talk about how you handle food now, and they're like, well, that just sounds over the top and crazy. That is just not something that someone should have to do. And, like, I'm sure you've had people say that to you. Like, how do you respond when someone says, okay, that's great that that's working for you, but that's just way too extreme and you shouldn't be doing that?
I mean, again, right, stemming from, I guess, being a private person and not really wanting to deal with that too much, I just tell them I don't want to die. I want to live to have grandkids and to know them, right? I have an extreme illness, so I have to take an extreme approach. I get it. I am never going to tell anyone that the way that I behave around food now is, like, you know, how everyone should behave, because it's not, right? If you don't have the severity of the compulsive overeating that I've experienced in my life, right, and you look at the way that I eat from an outsider's perspective, right, I eat like, you know, I mean, it's most comparable to, like, a bodybuilder, like, going, you know, before a show, right, like, weighing out every single grain of rice and there have been many people that have told me, hey, sounds like you have an eating disorder. This is eating disorder behavior. And I, my response has always just been, it works for me though. I don't want to die. I had to get to a place where I stopped caring about what people thought about my method, because, you know, I knew that my method worked for me, and it was, you know, right. I have a nutritionist that built my meal plan for me. It's monitored, right. I get a physical every year from the doctor, right. It's not as if I, am just pounding down amphetamines all day and not eating for a week at a time. Right. I tried to find a holistic method that I could adopt for a lifetime, right? I'm not on a diet, right? I guess you could, you know, call it that per se, but I'm not interested in a short-term solution, mm-hmm. right? If it takes me another 15 years to lose the next 100 pounds I need to, okay, that's fine. As long as I'm just free from that mental obsession that consumed me every single day of, well, when am I going to eat next? What am I going to eat? How am I going to get that? And fantasizing while I'm at work about the snacks I'm going to have when I get home, or literally waking up in the first thought in the morning being, oh, cool, what's in the refrigerator, right? Like that, I mean, it's maddening. And it was, you know, just as painful, as, if not more painful than the physical part of the addiction, right, is the feeling that I was completely helpless against my own mind.
And you finding the right tool to free yourself from that is the important through line for anyone listening to take away from this. Like you said, it's not you saying, like, you know, for me, that's a ketogenic diet. But I don't tell it, and it's funny because sometimes people will say, you know, I listen to your podcast expecting it to be about keto all the time, and it's not at all. Like, you know, it's every 10th guest might be someone who used keto or not. But it's understanding that the purpose of sharing stories is about showing not just what tool a person found, but that the person did it. You know, that the person found, you know, because like the reality is, like you said, the choices you're making around food now are what's saving your life, are what's giving you that freedom. And to the person on the outside who can't understand, you know, can't wrap their head around how they would eat that way. It's the same thing when a person says to me, you know, I couldn't live without bread anymore. You know, if you took pasta away from me, I would die. And I always smile and say, well, that's great. Then don't do what I did. You know, find something for you. You know, you go on and do, you know, I'm not telling you to do what I did. Go on and do what you need to do for yourself. But understanding that it is a reality that you had to find a way to save your life, you know, and I don't think that's, you know, like I understand from your perspective, it comes from that place of, I don't want to get into a long interpersonal conversation with this person because I'd rather avoid that. But it is the answer. You know, it is the answer. Like, and I always say to people, like, if you tell someone, you know, when they say, you know, how do I explain to this person, you know, I have a family gathering coming up and I haven't been eating this for a while, so I'm not going to be able to eat Aunt Sally's macaroni and cheese at the family gathering this next weekend, and she's going to ham on me. And I said, well, if Aunt Sally loves you and you say to her, I'm not diving into that mac and cheese because that puts me on a path that is leading me to possibly die, and she doesn't understand that, or doesn't at least say, I appreciate that and I'm glad that you're here, then that's a whole nother conversation that doesn't have anything to do with the food choices you're making and the life you're living. It has to do with that person. That's an issue that person has. Like, I can't even say the number of times I said, if someone's hurt by you not eating food, that person has an issue with food. It's not your issue. Like when I have a client who says, you know, someone brought in homemade muffins to the office today, and so I felt really bad, so I had to have one because they'd be really upset. And I'm like, no, you wanted a muffin, and you used the conception that they would be really upset if you didn't eat the muffin as a reason to eat that muffin, right? And they're like, well, no, I think they would be really upset. And I'm like, do you really? And if they were, is that someone whose upsetness you're actually that concerned about? Like, if a person throws a fit over you not eating a muffin, like if a person throws a fit, you know, to you, if a person throws a fit over the fact that you weigh and measure all of your food, okay, it's almost like you have to say, I understand you don't understand it, sorry, you know, I'm not going to apologize for saving my life. I'm not going to apologize for the choices I make, you know, and I'm also not going to buy into the descriptions you're putting on my life, because you'd never see someone saying to someone, you know, and actually that, you know, now I'm going to contradict myself. You know, plenty of times when people stop, you know, someone who has an issue with alcohol stops drinking, there are people that you used to drink with who are going to say, come on, have a drink. You can have just one. But the people that actually know and care about you and understand what you were going through aren't going to try to keep pushing a drink on you when you say no, thank you. Like,
yeah,
it's understanding that taking care of yourself is important, and it's okay to take care of yourself. And, you know, that's, and I'll be honest, that's when I would say, well, I used to not be able to do these X, Y, and Z. I can do those things now. So if you don't understand the way that I'm eating, I don't really care. Like, I don't, I'm not that concerned about you not understanding it. I don't, you know, if you, and I'll, you know, and I'm a gregarious, talkative person when it comes to these issues. Like, so if someone's really curious, I'll sit down and explain what I've been through or refer them to the podcast or any of those things. But it comes down to like what you owe other people when it comes to saving your own life. And really that you owe yourself, you know, you owe yourself to make the choices that are going to allow you to do that, not acting a certain way to fill the mold of what someone else thinks the way a person should behave or the tool a person should use or any of those things. I don't know. I just got ranty there for a second, so I apologize.
No, I like talking to like-minded people, right? Because I feel the same way, you know, being, you know, in recovery from drugs and alcohol as well as food, right? There is a certain level of selfishness that's required. That's inherent in being successful in this, right? I've struggled against that, right? I really had to figure out what was important to me. And I couldn't, the approach that I had taken at times, in my sobriety and, in my recovery from food is, trying to fit the programs that I worked into my life instead of having to fit my life into that program, because I'm nothing without it. Right? I can't do anything without it. I'm just useless. So, you know, there's a quote, to your point about, you know, people kind of, you know, giving you crap about, the way that you eat or not understanding it. And it was something my mom sent to me when I was in rehab. She wrote it in a letter and it's stuck with me ever since. And it's a Dr. Seuss quote, and it's mean what you say and say what you mean, because those that mind don't matter and those that matter don't mind. And I just, that's always stuck with me with how profound it was, because it really connected with me there that it doesn't matter what people think about the way that I live my life. I know for me that the actions I take on a daily basis make sure that I am here in 10 years. Right? That's what's important to me, is being able to live a life that's fulfilling and you know, has the longevity that I want for me. I'm not here to live my life for what other people want from me. But I did live that way for a long time, right? As you know, I was talking about earlier in our conversation about, you know, how I was younger and just being kind of that yes man, right? I lived my life for what other people wanted for so long that I've developed this intense independence, I think almost to a fault at times, around how I live my life now, but it's allowed me to find that freedom, right? And find a way to coexist with food. I can't stop eating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the, you know, I can stop drinking. I can stop doing drugs. I can't stop eating. I have to eat. And so I had to find what worked, and I'm grateful that I did, and you know, I'm able to come and share, you know, that I've had some success with that, right? And that, as I'm sure you've had many times on your show, I'm sure you've heard every imaginable solution for obesity and overeating, right? I mean, I can't even imagine how many different methods people have used to overcome. I'm just providing another, right? And for anybody listening, right? Take your pick. Try them out, you know? The only thing that I ever, you know, especially with people that are coming into, you know, recovery, mainly from drugs and alcohol that I speak to, is I just warn them of contempt without prior investigation, right? Don't judge something you haven't tried. So to anybody that would, you know, that would be good to say to anybody that would has an opinion about how I eat, right? Like, why don't you try it out? Maybe you won't hate it, right? Maybe it's not so bad, and it's really not. It sounds extreme, and it is, but it's just my life now.
Well, and I think it sounds extreme in the context of we have built a culture that surrounds food. Food is celebration. Food is fun. Food is entertainment. You know, all of those things. Like, we have really built ourselves to a place where food has gone way beyond being something that fuels our body and helps us take care of ourselves and provides health and life force and all those things. It's food has become this thing that fills a lot of different roles that we don't even always want to, you know, necessarily admit to or acknowledge, because, you know, that's when you run into problems with people, when they're looking at what you're doing and, you know, they start to take personal offense because they almost think, well, if you're doing that, you must be judging me for what I'm doing. And it's like, it's in the end, it's not about that. You know, it's about what a person needs to do to take care of themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, that's how I would leave it, right? Is like the main thing that I try to wake up and take with me through my day is I have to take care of me first. If I don't do that, then I can't help anybody else, right? If I'm not in the best, you know, possible state that I can be in, what good am I going to be to try to help anyone else, you know, through the recovery lifestyle, right? One of the major tenets of that is service to others. I can provide no service to anyone else unless I'm providing service to myself first. And so trying to help people understand the inherent level of selfishness is always interesting, because, you know, when you say that on the surface, it's like, oh, that's, you're a selfish person. You're like just proclaiming that you're selfish. And it's like, yeah, I totally am proclaiming that I'm selfish for sure. Because the consequences for me not being selfish are death. Right. And that, you know, usually if that ends up being the end of that line of questioning, because, you know, there's no better way to say it.
No, 100%, man. So with everything that you've been through, man, and knowing what life was like for you at 450 pounds, what is it like for you, you know, outside of how you're eating food and, you know, that side of the piece of it, like, what is life like for you now?
Yeah. And it's awesome, right? Like, so I'm a big golfer. I love to golf. It's always been something that I can't say it's always been something I've been passionate about. It's a complete lie. I hated golf for most of my life. my father is an avid golfer and a lifelong golfer. And so golf was always something I had an interest in. And when I was 450 pounds, right, I could barely swing a golf club correctly at that weight. My golf game was horrible. And I would be exhausted, right? Going and sitting outside in the heat for 4 hours in a golf cart just seemed miserable. Like, oh, how could, you know, no thanks. And now that's not the case, right? Golfing is my favorite activity on earth. It's where I relax. It's where I unwind, right? My best friend, we developed our relationship through golf. And I'm able to do that, And I wasn't before. I'm able to enjoy that, and I wasn't before. I was able to find one of the things in my life that I was that I'm truly passionate about. That I am convinced I would not have found that passion had I remained 450 pounds. It just wasn't possible. I've developed really good relationships with people through exercise. right? I was a competitive power lifter for a while. I stopped doing that due to injuries and you know, my own ego getting in the way. But it was an exercise in humility, honestly. And I just feel like now I don't have to worry about which chair I'm going to sit in. Right, I've broken many a chair, and it's probably one of the most humiliating things that can happen. I mean, it is just horrifying. I don't have as much of that hypervigilance that I used to have, that everyone's staring at me and everyone's thinking about, you know, how fat I am and that they're silently judging me, right? There's not as much of that. And you know, like I had said earlier, right, being able just to go in the store and buy clothes. I think for me, just as much of the physical piece that I have gotten from losing weight, there is an equal amount of mental freedom, right? Like I was saying, and I touched on a little bit with this, that like obsession. I don't really think about food anymore, right? I definitely save money, for sure. I'm not spending nearly as much money anymore. But I already know what I'm going to eat. And so this mental capacity is freed up to explore tons of other things, right? Like I like to read now. I like to play video games. It's one of my main, passions. And, you know, being able, to eat the way that I do ensures that a sedentary hobby like video gaming isn't, you know, perpetuating obesity for me, right? Because that used to be a huge perpetuator for me, right? Sit in front of the Xbox and, you know, have a half cold pizza in front of me and polish it off without even thinking twice. And now I don't experience that. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think you hit on something that is so resonant for people, you know, people that have been through a similar weight loss experience, you know, regardless of the circumstances around it. It's realizing how much you don't, it's almost like you don't acknowledge how much mental space it was all taking up. You know, the food obsession, but like you were saying, the navigating furniture, navigating the aisles in stores. Can I sit somewhere in a restaurant? We're going somewhere new. What do I got to learn about that? You know, how many times, you know, you call a restaurant just to find out, are they tables or booths? Or can you find pictures online? You know, can you get on a Yelp review and see inside the restaurant? Like,
yeah, it's just a lot airplanes, of man.
Yeah. Like it's figuring out there. So there's the physical benefits and then there's just that incredible mental benefit. So I think it's great that you highlighted that, because I think sometimes people don't think about it and don't realize that something where they hear, you know, especially when they feel that the way you're eating is complicated, or the, you know, the way anyone is eating is complicated. It's like, well, when you've cleared out 75% of the mental space that you were using before to obsess about food and navigate through life and the body you were in, you have that bandwidth, you know, you have a couple gigabytes left over to manage the things that you need to manage. And, you know, I also want to, you know, go, you know, not necessarily go back to, but just, I think that the piece where you talked about, you know, finding community through what you're doing, you know, the program that you've used, like, I think there's just something there that's powerful for people to think about in terms of finding those connections and finding that place of similarity with people, and whether a person's using a different tool or not, you know, finding people of common experience so that, you know, you're not alone, and that you also, you know, there's something to be said about the lying side of it and the covering things up and that piece. When you find true community, that's where a lot of that gets broken down as well, because you're not,
absolutely,
you're not having to create those facades anymore. You get more comfortable at saying, no, this was a crappy day and all I want to do is go eat my face off, but I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm staying to the plan that I'm doing, because there are times, you know, people that don't understand that, you tell them that, and I've done that. You get that stare back, like, as if they somehow didn't think at 540 pounds that I was eating my face off on a daily basis. Like, you know, like it doesn't happen magically overnight, people. Like, So being able to build those connections, you know, and then also see the way you move through the world now, you know, I think that's really great, man. Like, as we move to the end of this recording, like, is there anything in your story that you would hope we talk about today, or anything you wanted to make sure we talked about that we haven't gotten into?
You know, I think I've really touched on kind of all of the highlights. I've tried to be as concise as I can, because I mean, trust me, man, I could go on for 4, 5, 6 hours about my life, because one of the benefits or curses, depending on how you look at it, of being in the rooms of recovery for going on 7 years now is I've had a lot of time to look at myself. Had a lot of time to examine myself, right? I have a lot of co-occurring mental illness that comes along with my substance abuse disorders. I'm actively engaged in therapy right now, which I can't stress enough how important that is. So, you know, there's so much here that you could unpack. You know, that would be, we could spend all day doing it, but I think really the main point that I just want to give to the audience here and to you and to anybody that finds, if you find this 50 years from now on a, you know, flash drive somewhere, right? Like, and I say this to every treatment center I go to before I finish talking, it's that I love and respect all of you. If you're on this path, no matter how well you think you're doing, no matter how much you're struggling, no matter how many setbacks you've had, the fact that you're on the path and you're willing to keep trying has earned my infinite love and respect, and that I'm always here to help. Always. That is the main theme I want to carry in my life, and that I want to express to others, is that it doesn't matter how alone you may feel you are in this moment, you at least have one person that's in your corner. We can never interact. I can never speak to you ever, but you can still know that I'm in your corner, supporting, rooting, and fighting for you simply for the fact that you are who you are.
Well, then, man, let's talk about, if people do want to interact with you, where do they find you?
Yeah, Instagram's going to be probably the best place. I'm the Bearded Mountaineer on Instagram. Feel free. Anybody can reach out and shoot me a message. I think I have my profile set to private, but as I've alluded mm-hmm. to, I tend to be more of a private person. Oh, yeah. But I am more than willing to talk to anybody. If you're on Reddit, right, it's u/woods, WOODSCP. Shoot me a message on Reddit. I'm happy to talk on there as well. It's totally fine by me either way. You know, I'm sure people would find other methods to find me too, right? My name's Cole Woods. I'm not hiding. So if you're in the Minnesota Twin Cities area, that's where I'm located. Right. If this is something you enjoyed listening to and you wanted to talk more, right, reach out. We'll get coffee. I'm always happy to interact with anybody that has questions or wants to know a little bit more about what I do.
And I will definitely put a link to your Instagram in the show notes for this episode, man. And I also have to send a shout out to, I think the person's handle was like Colonel Max. They on that Reddit thread that you sent me highlighted. Yeah, you should reach out and, you know, and check out the podcast. So, you know, it's always nice to see things in places that I'm not always in. So, you know, kind of spreading the word. So I appreciate that. If that person's listening, because they probably are, thank you. You know, I appreciate it. And it may be someone I know who just has a Reddit handle that I don't know. That's completely okay.
Sure.
So, man, I end every episode with 5 questions I call the Fat Guy 5. Are you ready for your run through those questions?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay, so question number 1, living or dead, who is your favorite fat guy?
Chris Farley.
There we go. Question number 2. What is something about yourself that you love?
I love my beard. I have a really nice beard.
Hey, there you go, man. Question number 3. Looking at all of the work that you have done, Cole, what do you think is the most important new habit that you built?
Transparency.
Mm.
Communication.
I like it. Cool. Question number four. What is one goal you have for the next year that is not health, fitness, or weight loss related?
Take over a larger division at my my job I have.
Nice. And question number five, Cole, if you could go back in time and talk to yourself on the first day you started, you know, this leg of your journey, your weight loss journey, what is a message you would give to yourself?
It gets better.
Plain and simple. I like it.
Simple as that.
Definitely mine. Well, Cole, a big thank you for coming on the show today and everyone listening. Cole is going to join me on the Patreon after show. So don't forget, if you're not signed up for that, get signed up. But Cole, just big thank you for everything that you shared today and your willingness to come on and be open and transparent. No pun in, you know, no referring back to the Fat Guy Five on purpose, but being transparent about your experiences and also what you've been doing. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. This has been a great experience. I'm really, really glad that I got to have this opportunity.
And like I said, everyone, I'm going to put a link to Cole's Instagram in the show notes today. And you can also always connect with me on Instagram at GourmetGoesKeto, on Twitter at GourmetGoesKeto. You can email the show at thefatguyforum@gmail.com. Don't forget the people do a lot and then ask me why I haven't responded to their emails. thefatguyforum@gmail.com. And then, my friends, remember, go out there and do something today to amaze yourselves, because you're the most amazing people that I know. Then catch us here again on the Fat Guy Forum.